KUJZ is 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What'd I win?
Live from the Papa John's studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they
going
to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
And a most terrific Tuesday to you.
Thanks for tuning in.
Sports talk on crunch time on it's the radio, 95.3 The Score. I always crack up when certain writers do a full mock draft of the NFL. You know, 32 picks, 7 rounds.
Oh, hell yeah. Where?
We've got the equivalent. ESPN has their experts predicting all 32 college basketball conference tournaments. That's a lot. I mean, you've got the Big 12 with 10 teams. As a rule, everybody else has at least that. So they're real. I mean, they're going through 340, 350 teams trying to gauge their potential. And I'm sure if they're in any way semi-reasonable human beings with some kind of time limit on their hands, I mean, are they going to think Binghamton, the Bearcats in the America East, who finished last, are they just going, no, Maine, UMass Lowell, no, and just, you know, working from their way up? Do they think Kennesaw State, who went 0 for the Atlantic Sun, has a shot of knocking off Liberty or the Ospreys of North Florida? See, to me, I don't have any interest in all the predictions. Like, I don't care about the numbskull who says, well, I think that outside linebacker from Bucknell is going to go in the 5th round to the Giants. I want to know the process. I want to see this psycho. Is he in one of those rooms where conspiracy dudes kind of, first you got to press a button to get in the room, and then there's only a special kind of lighting because the wall doesn't go all the way to the floor and they can't be seen in there. And then there's they get the strings attached and then the push pins.
There's certainly an entire wall that's made out of cork. It's not a cork board, it's a cork wall. And they have a bunch of players that are put up there. We might even be getting to the point where they've rented out an office for the month of, you know, March leading up to the draft through April, whatever, and it's a gigantic whiteboard with all of the teams and all of the picks that they have in every round, and then you've got another whiteboard with all of the prospects on it. You've definitely got some string involved with some push pins or some magnets of some kind. I'm not thinking there's necessarily a button you have to press to get into a room, but there is certainly some sort of curtain that has closed off a doorway. There's not a lot of natural light coming into this room.
No, that room is not supposed to be there.
No, yeah.
What happens is, I'm watching this show on Amazon Prime, Hunters, about hunting Nazis in the 1970s in the United States. And there's one kid who's got this incredible ability to calculate, and they break into a place, they break into a bank, and they're looking for a specific strong box. And he's like, this room, I looked at the blueprints, this room is smaller than it should be, which means there's something behind it, and they found it. But anyway, we're inching our way closer towards the start of the Pac-12 women's tournament. We'll have Oregon and Cal Thursday night and Saturday night. By the way, thank you, TV. You've been kind of nice to us throughout most of the season. Then you're going to hit us with back-to-back 8 o'clock starts, so a pox on you and your ancestors. NBA last night, leave it to the idiot Knicks to finally get a notable win and then humiliate themselves again the following day. How about the? They beat Houston. Houston's one of the top six teams in the country. They're ranked sixth.
Do any of their wins really matter if you're the Knicks at this point this season?
That's true. Well, if you're a Knicks fan, it was notable.
Is it?
It is.
Is it deep? Are you really excited that they beat the Rockets? Is that something that brought you joy when you read that box score?
I was watching the end.
Ugh, Steve, do you need help?
Hey, I have Steve, said many times before.
Do you need help?
I'm a Knicks fan. Nothing's going to change that. Obviously, nothing is going to change that. They've literally done everything for two decades, the better part of a third of my life, to do everything they can to change that, and no.
Do you feel your patience has been rewarded, or are you actually starting to see through that you might actually be stupid?
No, actually, rather than celebrate their victory, I kind of felt for the Houston people. Because it's like, how low could you stoop during an NBA season? And by the way, yes.
Actually, they can stoop a lot lower. They're playing a lot of small ball now, Steve.
How about they got out-rebounded 65-34? So since Houston decided to go small ball and trade Clint Capella, that was like a four-team deal. I think Atlanta and Minnesota and Houston and all kinds of horrible people.
We were traded, I think, technically.
Yeah, we're not supposed to be here. Time's running out. They've been out-rebounded in all 12 games, but they were 9-2 going into last night, make it 9-3. I mean, the Bricks had three different guys in double digits. By the way, speaking of talking about my Knicks, your Bucks, that was their worst offensive performance since the season started. That's the only time they've been under 90. They've only been under 100 twice. Miami went into lockdown mode on them. But, of course, the Heat are Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. They're, like, the best home team, and they're, like, one of the worst road teams.
It's fine. The Bucks have already won the NBA title this year. I think I told you that a couple weeks ago. They clinched a playoff spot, and they won the NBA title. This is my understanding of basketball.
Happen. I'm not even sure they're going to win the East.
By 15 games.
No, I mean win.
Oh, through the playoffs. Okay.
Me no trusty.
Coin flip.
And yes, to the many of you who since Sunday got into the spoiler alert watching Curb Your Enthusiasm, who, if you're not familiar with it, if you're a Seinfeld fan, Larry David, co-creator, he was George in real life, now for many years has had his own series, although it disappeared for several years. So the gist of the episode was, and by the way, there's no topic off limits. There are no filters. Larry David and they're just the worst people in the world. I mean, take the worst, most selfish, unfiltered traits of Jerry, George, Kramer, Elaine, and Newman, and the rest of the cast that were just a-holes. You know, as the grand finale of Seinfeld, they justifiably ended up in jail for a year for the backstabbing, awful comments. And anyway, they're all fine citizens compared to Larry David on Curb. So in the Sunday episode, a friend commits suicide, and everybody determines that it's because he's a Jets fan. And I'm not making this up. He leaves a suicide note saying he can't take the disappointment anymore. And Larry David has a line in there that says, "The Jets killed Carl and a little bit of the Knicks." I'm telling you, to relate a sitcom episode to sports, this might be the best one ever. Ever. And I'm not just saying that. I watched it twice. Yes. Yeah. If you don't watch the show, you don't get it. They're horrible people. He has run-ins with people. He falsely uses a disabled sign on his car. He gets into disputes with women who are just facing such... It's just awful. But it's a sitcom. It's not real. Therefore, it's funny. He says the Jets killed Carl. Then he's like, a little bit of the Knicks. And it to any New York fan, obviously, it's like it makes perfect sense. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. And some of you, by the way, I'm getting tweeted at on Sunday night, and I'm like, I shut it down because I didn't want any even subtle hints as to what it was about. But once I watched it last night and then this morning again. I had to just go through it to make sure I saw what I think I saw. What's her name? The blonde, Jane Krakowski from 30 Rock. She originally got her start on Ally McBeal and Jeff Garland. And, oh my God, these people are just horrible, horrible human beings. But anyway, if you saw it and you're a fan, you're like, yeah, I can't even believe that I got to witness that. Is that funny? All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in James. James, good afternoon. How's it going?
Steve, what's going on?
How you doing?
Doing good. Hey, so what if the Knicks hired Michael Vick to the front office? Would you still be a Knicks fan?
No, absolutely not. Which, by the way,
it could happen. You never know.
A little right? bit different.
Oh, no, I know. I'm just checking. Just jabbing at you. I'd like to see you send all your Knicks stuff back in a box to James Dolan. That'd be pretty sweet.
Yeah, now there's a guy who I wish would just sell the team, disappear into his billionaire lifestyle, and everybody by the next day would forget he ever existed.
I agree. Thanks, man.
All right, take it easy. Michael Vick. Actually, with this moron... Perhaps they would hire him to play point guard because he was fast once. That would be the James Dolan logic. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, if you want to jump on in. I love just crazy statistical anomalies. So because they've been human the last couple years, the women's basketball news has not been so predominantly UConn. Yet last night, they beat South Florida, I don't know, by 140 points. I think it might have been 80 to 39. And that's their last game as a member of the American Athletic. They're going to go back to the Big East next year. So they played seven seasons in that league. That's 118 conference games. If you haven't already heard, you know, I could play the over-under game with you. So over seven full seasons in that conference, 118 games... Within three, how many losses in conference does UConn have?
Zero.
Exactly.
I read the stat. So
they never lost. And it's like, wait. Stop a second. So the scariest part about it is their average margin of victory was 41 points. The last time they lost a conference game would have been March 12th, 2013, in the Big East final to Notre Dame. So they lost their last game in the Big East, decided, well, we're going to leave. Maybe we'll come back. Won every other game and decided to go back. They beat SMU by 61. They beat Memphis 87-24 one game. 102-37 against South Florida. And hell, that year they beat South Florida that badly, they played them again in the tournament final. That was the second best team. I went back and looked year by year, and they beat them in two games, 102-37, and then South Florida went to work. They only lost 100 to 44. Think about that. They cut off 2 points on one end, seven on the other, and lost by a total of 202 to 81.
Man, you give them another 15 years, you're cutting it down to a single possession
game. Yeah, they're
going to
get inside
game.
17.
Oh, wow.
It might be a 6-7 possession game. Then they beat Wichita State the next year, 124-43. And yeah, they play a killer non-conference schedule because Auriemma knew we're not getting any quality wins or quad one wins in this league. And by the way, you think, well, they're going to the Big East, so that is what? The Big East has one team in the national ranking, DePaul at 18. Marquette is in the also receiving votes category with four total votes. So it's one of the reasons that when we were talking with Coach Graves yesterday, Oregon should be the one seed. And that's not because we're sitting in a 9-7-4-0. They have a much better schedule. They've beaten much better competitions. And they're not. And the thing is, if the consensus is accurate, and it really is down to Oregon, Baylor, and South Carolina, it matters. Well, actually, Oregon should lose a game and fall to the four seed because at least they'd avoid. Then the other ones would be the one anyway. They need to be the one seed so they don't have to play South Carolina or Baylor until the national championship game. It's justifiably, I mean, this conference is so much better than the rest of the country. It's like head and shoulders. And to win this at 17-1, I would actually like to talk to Charlie Cream, who's like the Lenardi / Jerry Palm of the women's game, and say, you know, what are your criteria? How are you arriving? What data are you inputting that, and with writers, it's one thing. They basically decide, okay, here's a number one team and they're not losing. So it's almost like sit on your hands, stubborn. Nope. I'm not dropping them if they, I don't care. I am not dropping them if they win. That's the way it is.
Oregon is like dominating other top 25, top 10 teams.
Like, not even close.
Winning by a lot at home and on the road, and they're not even picking up more votes in the AP poll. Like, there is one person. I don't know if it's the same person or if they're just rotating through who gets the vote for Oregon this week. But they're not even picking up other votes to.
No,
to
it's
move
because
up
South Carolina and Baylor have one loss, and they have two. It's as simple as that. And the interesting thing is, Oregon, I have a feeling, are getting more second-place votes than Baylor because Baylor's number two at 27-1, but they're only 13 points ahead of Oregon. And if you notice, Louisville at four is 59 points. So the swing from 2-3, actually the swing from 1-3, South Carolina to Oregon is smaller than Oregon to Louisville at 4-5. By the way, UConn, with their losses all forgivable, I think they lost to South Carolina, Oregon, and Baylor. Otherwise, well, obviously, like we just said, they sure as hell haven't lost in league. So, if you look, you've got the Ducks. You got Stanford, UCLA. That's three of the top eight. Then you get Arizona and Oregon State. That's five of the top 13. And you throw Arizona State in there. That is six ranked teams. The only one really close, you got South Carolina, Mississippi State, A&M, Kentucky, and Arkansas down at number 25. That's five. So it's not a real discussion about where the power lies. I mean, the Big 12 has just Baylor in the national rankings. So it's an exercise in semi-frustration. But because of what I just said, if Baylor just runs through the Big 12, which is weak, and Oregon is in a spot where they might be able to knock off another two or three ranked teams in the top 15, and that's going to have to rearrange the computer a little bit. And does it matter if they're a two or a three, or a three or a two, if they're not a one, and they're going to have to play Baylor or South. Or at this point, if South Carolina wins out, I think they'll be the one overall. And I'm not saying that's justified. I just can't imagine them going from there to winning out in a good conference, in the arguably in the second best conference. The Big Ten's pretty good. Maryland's a good team. How about Northwestern, 26-3? Iowa, Indiana. Oh, Indiana is a team who knocked off one of the premier programs. And they are, like I said, at 20. But, no, the most impressive resume, the best top-to-bottom team is Oregon. And I know it's easy to sit here and say that, but, you know, I'm echoing the sentiments of people like Rebecca Lobo and those who cover the sport for a living for ESPN and other various outlets. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Also wanted to get to, what was the other thing I needed to get to? Oh, the injury bug that's just hitting some of the MLB teams. Now you got Chris Sale on the shelf. We've also got, I want to hit on something on a semi-personal note for everybody. I was going over, and we will, yeah, I saw, for the few of you who've texted, I know that the Pac-12 handed out their women's awards, and all I could think of is before they went on that Bay Area trip, and somebody asked Sabrina about the possibility of a Pac-12 co-championship, and her comment was, "We don't like sharing." Well, when it came to all the major conference awards, that really came to fruition. They don't like sharing. UNESCO for the third year in a row is Conference Player of the Year. Coach Graves, kudos. Back-to-back Coach of the Year. The sixth man, I guess the sixth Player of the Year, is Taylor Chavez. All Pac-12, you got Sabali, you've got Hebert, Mignon Moore, 2 years USC, 1 year with Oregon, Pac-12 all-defensive team. So just on and on and on and on. And, you know, definitely adding to the trophy case for the program and for those incredible players individually. So we'll get to that as well. All right, 284-8571. The Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. We'll take a break. We'll be back with a Coors Light update and more Crunch Time. 95.3, The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
They've got the best point guard big man combo in the country in Devon Dotson and Udoka Azubuike. And Azubuike, really, there's no player like him in college right now. He is near unstoppable with a single defender. And he's moving his feet so well. He gets up and down the floor well. He can actually guard ball screens well now.
Jay Billis of ESPN on the new unanimous number one Rock Chalk Jayhawk as we welcome you back to Crunch Time, 95.3 The Score. We've got a Tuesday circumstance. Did you realize that these things turn into I'm a victim of circumstance. So I was thinking, first of all, I was reading the story in the Register Guard about the Olympics. I mean, right now, if you had to make a bet, would you, what's your comfort level that we're going to be having a Tokyo Olympics right now? I'm thinking, and I'm not an alarmist, though I was happy that somebody provided us with hand sanitizer here in the studio. I've used it twice already today. And I'll tell you what, I've got to get away from this habit of every time I enter a room kind of smacking the top like I'm dunking or I'm doing a layup, and I have a tendency to kind of zzz across the walls. I'm very touchy with things and cabinets and all stuff like that.
Do you make those sounds all the time too?
Well, actually, there's a one banner that hangs as you're walking into our break room, and if you run your finger along it, it goes zzz. So I've tried to stop doing that. But and maybe just avoid people in general. I know there's a part of me that's like, all right, so Oregon Cal at Matthew Arena. Then Saturday, there's a Stanford game. And there's going to be two women's games. And it's like, am I done going to a public events until this thing passes? I guess, am I being naive in saying it's safer outside, like at a baseball game?
No, isn't the virus passed by close contact with people? If you're constantly around people that are always not around the other sick people, you'll probably be okay. So if you go to a large event with a large variety of people showing up from all sorts of different places who have been to different places into one area, that's the thing you want to avoid.
I'll tell you what, if like I was on a game show and they were like, that's it, you've won it, an all-expense paid trip too? I'm like, do I have to get on an airplane? No. Right now, you literally couldn't pay me to get on an airplane. Sorry. BSTS. Better safe than sorry. And by the way, it's not like I'm like, you shouldn't go on a plane. You can do whatever the hell you want. Just, I know we were planning for a couple of years, this was going to be the spring where we contemplated Europe. And it's like, no. The word I'm looking for is no. But, yeah, affordable, at literally at what price?
A little bit cheaper flight, a little cheaper hotel. You buy a couple masks, wear some gloves.
Well, I have
Purell.
A plane to myself. And that, I mean, can I drive first class?
You talk about an overseas flight where you get a row to yourself. That's hitting the jackpot right there.
Could you roll the window down even just a little? I'm not so thrilled with this recycled air, Mr. Pilot. But anyway. So I was thinking about the crowds we've seen at women's games, but for the positive reasons, for the sellouts, and the way that this team has ignited the passions for the local fans. And, you know, we had people on the show recently, someone like yesterday, Josh was on, talking about taking his, I think, 7-year-old daughter to see the Lady Ducks. And Josh is a Beavs fan. And now she loved it so much, she's kind of hooked on hoops and even is partnering with Josh to watch the Trailblazers. But I don't know, for those of you out there who are moms, dads, guardians, aunts, uncles, coaches, who actually made it your business in the last couple years to take your little ones, you know, elementary school, middle school, to watch the women, and I'm curious what the reaction has been. Because if you're listening to a show like this, I'm thinking, you know, majority of you are really, really big sports fans. So what got you? I mean, was it seeing a team? Did you take him to see the Oregon team? Did you take him to see Sabrina? Was your young sports fan pestering you to go to the game? I was at school today. They said they were at the Oregon game and it was a lot of fun. Could I go, please, Mom? Could you take me? You know, that's probably a common conversation. Or to kind of make that generational connection, I mean, what attracted you? In a lot of cases, like me, I showed a little bit of an interest early on, but I had a dad and a lot of his best buddies who loved sports and wanted, you know, to be the one to take ST East and his little one to games. And, do you remember your first fill-in-the-blank MLB game? Do you remember your first NHL game? Because I know with you, NBA probably didn't come into play, really.
Oh, I vividly remember my first NBA game because
we were a lot older.
I was 22.
Okay, yeah.
I was 22 when that happened. No, I remember my first football game was like a Niners-Rams game. And we sat in like, my dad and I sat in the third to top row at Candlestick. I don't remember a single thing that happened, but we took like some public transportation, like bus and BART hopping to get to the game. I kind of remember that.
But the decision to go to that game, was that dad wanted to take you to a game or you're like, I really like the Niners.
I don't remember.
So then it was his decision.
Yeah, probably. I remember I think my more vivid memories are like wanting to go to Sharks games because we had one of my parents' coworkers like bought in on season tickets and they were splitting up their tickets and they're like, we got a bunch of games we couldn't go to. And I was like playing roller hockey and my dad was getting back into playing hockey. And so I was, you know, excited to go. And then I got to the games and I realized we had to sit in the upper deck. And every time the Sharks scored, I felt scared to stand up because I thought if I stood up, I would turn into like a helium balloon and I would float away.
Wow.
Yeah, that was a very vivid feeling that I remember happening.
How about Giants?
There's two memories. Again, it was like a family thing where it happened. One of them was a full-size bat giveaway day, which is absolutely something that could not happen now.
No.
It was like signed, I think, by Jeff Kent or JT Snow, one of the two of them. And the other was like a trading card day where all I remember is sitting under the bleachers at Candlestick and these guys running around like trying to complete a set of the starting lineup that day for the Giants, like trying to haggle with children and their parents to get like a Barry Bonds card because like some lucky
they needed
kid,
the set.
Yeah, they wanted to finish the set and they're trying to work a quick one over on some child or something.
But again, was it like you, Goose, I want to go see the Giants, or was it Goose like, you know, you seem to have an interest in baseball, let's go to a Giants game? Or is it just you wound up there?
It just happened. Like we got, I don't know, I don't remember how we got tickets. I wasn't asking my parents, so why are we going today? It was just like, cool, the Giants games. Like we listened to them in the car.
No, I think that's probably the most common tale. Just a parent, somebody had an interest and decided you're of age, it would be cool to take little so-and-so to a game.
Exactly, yeah. And I think the first time my parents took my sister and I to a game, it ended up being like one of the fastest games in San Francisco Giants history. Like it was basically like two Greg Maddoxes going at it against each other, and the game was over in like 2 hours and 15 minutes or something like that. And my mom was like, why can't every baseball game be like this where you show up and it's done like that?
Right.
I would like to leave now.
It doesn't have the eternal drag.
Right.
Yeah, I was taken to my first game by an enthusiastic dad who wanted to share. And, you know, my first NFL game, actually my first NFL game was an AFL game at Shea Stadium between the Jets and the Oilers with Namath at quarterback. And I had shown some interest and saw him play, and I was like, okay, so that's my favorite football player. And then in 66, when they were still the Kansas City Athletics, I was taken to my first Yankees game, and they still had Mickey Mantle. And I was like, okay, that's my favorite player. And we went to the Garden so long ago to see the then San Francisco Warriors before this garden was built. It was the year before. Again, I was about six or seven, and it was once I went to my first game, I basically became me. And if you ever saw the movie City Slickers, Billy Crystal is talking with Bruno Kirby on the cattle drive about seeing your first game. Now, he's a little older than me. As a matter of fact, he said for a lot of kids who grew up in the 50s and went to their first game in the early 60s, that was the first game they saw in color, in person. And because on TV, you couldn't tell what Yankee Stadium looked like, but the way it really was a cathedral of a ballpark. So you walk in and it's a really narrow tunnel, then all of a sudden, it's like that scene in The Wizard of Oz where it turns from black and white to color. It just expands, and there's the big green field, and there was the, you know, the old tinny kind of backdrop out there, and the wall used to be black. Now and it was later changed to blue, and you could see the color of the seats, and you know, considering it's a billion years ago, I have a pretty good memory. First of all, they stunk. Second of all, one of the reasons we went, it was later in the season, and somebody gave my dad like corporate seats. So walk, and you know, you're a little kid, you don't know where the seats are, you don't look and check a seating chart. Walk, and we're like seventh row behind the dugout.
I loved checking a seating chart though, because just like when I was starting, I was like 10, 12, 13, like the internet was becoming more popular, and then I learned about the 3D seating
chart.
Right,
that didn't exist in 1966, believe it or not.
Those things were the coolest. I would just like type in random sections and rows, and I'd look around. I'd be like, oh, I want to go to a Giants game here. I wonder what it's like to sit in these seats for a Sharks game. What are those seats like? Like, let me sit over there now. And then it was just the same like 3D image over and over and over and over again. But I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I loved looking at the seat chart, because you gotta pick out your seats. You gotta know if you can pick out your seats to sit somewhere, you got to be able to pick somewhere cool that you're like, I've never watched a game from this point.
But the difference between a 10-year-old in the information / internet age, a lot different than a 6-year-old back in the Stone Age.
I mean, you could have created the internet, Steve. You had that technology available in your mind, I'm sure.
Yeah, I was a little behind the times. But getting tickets to a game, and what happened is, you know, my dad worked in the city, so he'd shoot to an outlet, and you get the tickets, and he would have them in his jacket pocket, and he would go. I mean, I could remember whether it was Giants football, Jets football, Yankees, Mets, Knicks, and he would always have it in his pocket, and just at dinner, just look what I got. And I'd be like, ah, just, you know, running in circles. Because to me, as simple as it seemed now, the fact that we were living in New Jersey, the guys I see on TV, we were going to drive, go over the bridge into the tunnel, end up at Madison Square Garden, Yankee Stadium or Shea Stadium, and I was going to see the game. It was going to be the most important thing that ever happened in the history of mankind. I couldn't even focus for days at a time.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But I had a very similar panic, but it's because my dad worked in the East Bay, and he would have to like get off work early, try and beat a bunch of traffic home. He'd get home, change out of his work clothes into whatever he was going to wear to the Giants, the Sharks game, or whatever was going on that night, and then we'd have to fly right back up the freeway to try and get there in time for first pitch. So we went to a lot of weekend Giants baseball games, which is kind of a bummer because Bonds would never play on a day game after a night game.
Oh, really?
And we'd always play on Saturday. So Bonds is doing the load management thing where he was just like, I'm a grumpy old man, I like to sleep in, so I'm not going to play in my day games on Saturday. And then it just became who's going to pitch, and it was always like the fourth or the fifth starter, and I was like, I guess we get to watch that guy. But I was like, we're going to the Giants game, it's going to be cool.
I'll tell you what was strange. When we first started going to Knick games when the Garden opened, and we had season's tickets, a lot of the even the Saturday games in the first couple years were matinees. There were games where other teams would play at Madison Square Garden. Celtics, Pistons, I remember seeing that. Because you got to understand something. Back then, a lot depended, as far as the owners went, the revenue, what they took in at the gate. I mean, that's why they used to have blackouts, to prevent people from staying home and watching on TV. Owners were not always on board with TV.
Wait, so the Knicks would they give the money from the gate back to whatever the home team is of the?
I'm sure there
teams?
Was some kind of deal worked.
Okay, because I was gonna
say, like, because Philly drew crap, Detroit drew crap, but if the Celtics were in town and they played in New York, if it could be the difference between drawing 8 or 13,000 people, which meant a lot to the owners.
Because I was gonna say, if the goal is to get money through ticket sales and people coming in, having your games not in your arena that you played in kind of seems like a bad idea.
That may have ended like in 1968 or something like that. But you think about it now and just like, yeah, the Orioles and Tampa will be playing the opening game at Yankee Stadium tonight. But that actually existed. That was what we would call a thing. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Since it's a Tuesday, since it's crunch time, since it's the final segment, we'll hit you with...
What are you doing?
Next, 95.3 The Score.
.95.3 The Score is your home for live sports talk all day, every day. Download the TuneIn app and take .95.3 The Score with you wherever you go.
James Dolan somehow, someway, brings his heavy hand down upon a situation where he's got security and others enforcing rules and regulations that he's implemented, which consistently takes headlines away from the New York Knicks and has their organization in the news and the headlines for the wrong damn reason.
When's the last time the Knicks were in the headlines for the right damn reason? Stephen A. Smith, the New York Knicks are horrible. All right.
Or is this the best play from James Dolan by making it about him rather than the horrible product he's putting it out on the court? Because now you're not talking about how bad the Knicks are. You're talking about how poorly they're being run.
You brought up the Knicks. My answer is no. It doesn't even matter what the subject or the topic is. The answer is no. Wrong.
Fair enough, right?
All right, it's that time on a Tuesday where we often say, no, wrong. It's called What Are You Doing? Nick, go.
To professional soccer teams, I ask.
What are you doing?
Soccer is very slow to change. Internationally, it was one of the last to embrace replay review, goal line technology, and the fans are very much stuck in the old mindset possible. Back in my day, this is how Grandpappy did it, and this is how we're going to do it forever then. And the same goes apparently for their medical staffs on soccer teams. Yeah, they've got that magic spray you might have heard of where somebody fake an injury and rolls around for miles and miles and miles because he wasn't touched and has to fake being hurt and get sprayed to be better. The kind of technology, but whatever. But the same goes for serious injuries. In the two games I watched this weekend, two players suffered actual serious non-contact knee injuries. Gerard De La Feo of Watford and Joseph Martinez of Atlanta United got carted off, except there's no cart involved. It turns out soccer teams use the best medical technologies available from the 1940s. They come out with 6 to 8 people in a stretcher that looks like a cot, carrying these guys off the field, bouncing around like it's just nothing. These are multi-million dollar franchises. Buy a damn golf cart. These players don't need to be literally carried off the field. And I'm not sure how, but the area the guy gets hurt in is always on the opposite corner of the field where the ambulance and the medical team need to go. So they're not only getting just bounced around and carried off, they're doing it for 90 or so yards, and I'm worried they're going to get motion sickness. So buy a golf cart, drive slowly, don't mess up the grass, or at the very least, get one of those stretchers with wheels on it, as I ask.
What are you doing?
And on cue to Spike Lee and the New York Knicks, I ask.
What are you doing?
I think we might have set a record for pettiness over a first world problem. So Spike was on ESPN today saying, I'm not going to any more Knick games this year, he'll be back next year. Oh. He ended up in a shouting match with somebody at security. So he's trying to use the employee entrance instead of the VIP entrance because, heaven forbid, he come in with other peon ticket-holding fans. And by the way, somebody from the New York Post may have won Twitter today and said, so there's a dust-up over which gate to go in. We finally have gate.
That's it.
Which I was like, that is pretty good.
That's the winner.
The team tried to spin it. They showed a picture of the Academy Award-winning filmmaker and the idiot owner, James Dolan, shaking hands, which turned out to be, yeah, he did, but they were having a dispute. So Spike is totally being a completely entitled D-bag. Dolan and the Knicks are, as usual, being less than forthright about another embarrassing incident involving their buffoon organization and owner, but both are coming off as just elitist, out of touch, self-absorbed pinheads, as we ask.
What are you doing?
To Trevor Bauer, I ask.
What are you doing?
Trevor has been one of the more outspoken players in the wake of the Astros sign-stealing scandal. He's tweeted out several strongly worded tweets, including some at the commissioner, went on a 10-minute tirade during a press session based on one question, and even released like a 5-minute-long video on his YouTube page. He's big mad. To combat this, yesterday he decided he'd cut out the middleman of any potential sign-stealers in spring training by telling the batter what pitch he was just going to throw. It's kind of a universal sign language that pitchers use in their bullpens to let the catchers know what they're going to throw on. If you just kind of flip your glove up and just go right at him, that's a fastball. You flop it over, it's a curve. You can pull in for a changeup or move to the side for a slider or a sinker or something like that. So for one at-bat, this is exactly what Bauer did, and he got an out. And I'm not sure if he should stop doing this after one outing. Keep digging at the Astros. Keep the hate going strong. Hell, do it if you play the Astros, too. Now, this is, I mean, maybe... there now is not the time to slow down on this hate and pettiness. Just keep going, Trevor. Don't stop until you get shelled. And then maybe it's kind of a bad idea and don't do it. But until then, don't stop, as I ask.
What are you doing?
It's a very good Fleetwood Mac song as well. To the 8 L.A. County sheriffs involved in this story, I ask.
What are you doing?
Obviously, they suffer from some kind of reading disorder and thought serve and protect was self-serve and disgust. Sheriff Alex Villanueva has confirmed they allegedly took or shared graphic photos of the scene of the helicopter crash that claimed 9 lives, including Kobe Bryant. He ordered the idiots to delete the pictures. Villanueva said the behavior is inexcusable. And for the record, only the county coroner's office and National Transportation Safety Board are authorized to take photos. As officials said, people are grieving for the loss of their loved ones, and then to find out about this, or worse, come across a photo, or worse, find out they're being circulated as a bar, as kind of passing the time socially, is unconscionable. No policy currently exists about taking cell phone pictures, but expect a law to be pushed making it illegal for unauthorized photos of scenes depicting the dead. Public servants making a horrible situation worse, as we ask.
What are you doing?
Awkwardly, next up for me to Julian Edelman, I ask.
What are you doing?
Jules was with Touchdown Tom Brady at a Syracuse basketball game for some reason this weekend, and he made a loud, brash claim that Tom is coming back. When you see the video, Tom isn't looking all that happy that Edelman said it, while Julian looks like he's the coolest dude on the planet. And true or not, can't be doing that, Jules. When Brady ends up not coming back, he's only going to make Tom look worse because he's the New England hero who didn't come back, and it makes Brady look like a liar. Or he's going to be put on Brady's bad side by putting his business out there and creating lies and a PR problem that Brady doesn't want to have to deal with. Also, don't FaceTime people in public. It's very strange and not cool. Just don't do that. Don't do all of it, as I ask.
What are you doing?
Again, use the word no. To Duke's Coach K, I ask.
What are you doing?
You know, on yesterday's show, I talked about ageist comments, whether it's the older group chastising millennials or the younger folks, every time somebody disagrees with them, saying, okay, boomer.
Damn you.
Well, Coach K is now angry at people on Twitter for being critical of sports teams or players. I mean, the Blue Devils had just waxed North Carolina State, and on the radio, he went on the attack. I love his quote. It's amazing what people put on social media. Really, Coach? You just found this out? And I guess his heart was in the right place. He says, well, go after him. Then he's like, yeah, but if you do, you better come to Cameron and look up at the ceiling. First, I think he meant the rafters, at all the banners. Either way, you know what the best way for a 73-year-old to quiet Twitter trolls is? Attack them publicly and tell them to stop. Nice move, Kay, as we ask.
What are you doing?
That's literally the opposite way to do it. All right, break time back, 4 o'clock. Awa Sports Talk is next. 95.3 The Score.
Have you ever been to a volcano?